Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Raising a child is never easy, and there's lots of conflicting advice on how to do it. Every parent wants their child to become a self-confident, responsible, and respectful adult. But what are the best ways to instill these traits? Well, my guest today has been advocating his system of love and logic for nearly 40 years. Jim Fay's approach to child rearing believes that a child's self-confidence is best achieved through struggle and achievement, being held accountable for mistakes while the parents provide loving support and empathy. Today, thousands of parents and schools use his techniques to reduce home and classroom conflict, empower children to solve their own problems, and grow through their mistakes and the consequences of their actions or inactions. Today, we'll hear from co-founder Jim Fay, who's the co-founder of Love and Logic in the Institute, and the principal of Kendall Whittier Elementary School, Rhonda Kessler, where Love and Logic has been in place for 3 years. Tomorrow night, Jim's son, Charles Fay, a child psychologist and the president of Love and Logic Institute, will present a lecture on the system's techniques for the home. That takes place tomorrow evening at 6:30 at the University of Tulsa Student Union. And on Friday morning at 8:30, he'll present a day-long seminar for teachers on how to use the techniques in the classroom. Both are free and open to the public. Jim and Rhonda, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Thank you.
Jim Fay, you've been talking about love and logic for a long time, been on the show several times over the years. For those who are not familiar with love and logic, what is love and logic?
You know, it's some real simple, easy-to-learn techniques, about nine of them, that just make it real fun to raise your kids and to raise responsible kids who can think for themselves.
Well, and it gets down to teaching very adult behaviors to young children.
It would seem that way because the love and logic kids act so much more mature than their counterparts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the techniques are so simple that a lot of times people look at them and say, oh, gee, I don't know if that would work.
And it really is deflecting emotion out of child rearing, the emotional extremes out of child rearing in a lot of ways.
And it's negative emotions. Ways to discipline your kid without them seeing you as the source of the problem or as seeing you as being mean. You know, that's the real secret there.
At first glance, I think when you probably start instituting this, they will see you because basically a lot of times it's about the parent refusing to engage in the ticky-tacky argument back and forth on whether you're going to go to bed, you know, you leave your toys out, any typical child-rearing argument situation. It's about refusing to engage in that argument process.
Yeah, and they can get pretty upset about that because they start to realize that, hey, I created a problem and now it's mine. I can't make it my dad's or my mom's.
Yeah,
one of the first ones we ever teach people is how to neutralize begging, back talk, arguing, and so on. You know, the kids are always there to say, it's not fair. Well, you know what that is. Somebody has just set a limit for them, and they decided, wait a minute, I got to get some control here. I got to widen out these boundaries. So it's not fair. Dad lets us do it, you know. And it's very simple to just say things like, I know. No matter what they do, I know. Or, you know, by far the best one is, so what did I say? So what did I say? And turn your back and walk off. And that'll take care of things like, well, you don't love me. You know, we don't need to have an argument about whether or not we love them. We just need to say, and what did I say?
Or I love you too much to argue.
Love you too much to argue is one of our favorite ones. You know, people find one that they really like. And then if they're wise, they stick to that one. And that's the only one they ever use. So the kid says, I know what you're going to say. You're just going to say, how sad for me, you know, or bummer, or you love me too much to argue.
So when the child hears that, that the parent isn't going to engage, what is the process that they go through to understand what the limits that are being set?
Well, actually what happens is they start seeing that adult as the role model as somebody they need to listen to. But if I'm a little kid and I can debate with you about fairness or all that and get you to change my mind, I no longer have a role model in my family. I just feel like I'm on the same level. Mm-hmm. Now we got a leadership vacuum in our house. And you know what happens when there's a leadership vacuum? Somebody's going to try to fill that.
Yeah.
And that's usually the wrong person.
Now, you've been doing this system for a long time, and this comes out of your own career in education. How did you start coming up with this philosophy, and how did you begin figuring out that this is something that parents needed to know?
You know, if you have enough pain, then you start looking at yourself. I'm not proud to say that back in 1968, after I'd been teaching since 1953, I slapped one of my fifth graders. Mm. And lo and behold, he was a bleeder. Oh, he bled all over the place, tiny little cut. I was so embarrassed and so scared, and if I hadn't had a good relationship with his mom, I wouldn't be here. But I thought, I've got to find something else. Well, there wasn't anything really available at the university or in books that really made sense, and I started talking to some good psychologists, and they'd give me some ideas, and somehow I just kind of had a way to take all that theory and experiment and make it into simple little things. And I discovered I can't remember anything complicated. I need something real simple on the end of my tongue, you know, that I can use each time so that I don't go back to my old way. And that's how I happened to start getting into, let's make this as simple as possible so parents don't have a lot to remember when they're in the trenches and now are on the line.
And when emotion is a big part of it.
Yeah.
And emotion, you know, just getting kids to do what they need to do in your system is about taking that emotion out of it.
Take the emotion out of it, but put the empathy back into it. And that's really the secret. So if your kid has done something wrong, and you can very well say, boy, that really makes me mad. I'm going to have to do something about that. But not now. I'm going to calm down first, talk to my friends, get some ideas. And that's pretty scary for a kid. Mm-hmm. He'd like you to settle it right now while you're going to do it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so we teach parents, buy yourself some time. I'll get back to you. Try not to worry about it. Then when you deliver the consequence, the secret, and here's the one that makes the huge difference, an empathetic sound before you deliver the consequence actually changes brain chemistry and puts kid into thinking mode. It would be like this, oh, you wrecked the family car. Man, that must feel awful. Yeah. Now you've got the kid thinking. Now you can say, and you'll be driving again someday when you get that paid for, how do you want to handle it? And you hand the problem right back to them. They can't see you as being mean.
Now, one of the things you did with Love and Logic is move that into the classroom as a technique for teachers. And in the course of you and your son's appearance here in Tulsa, your son will be actually doing, who's also in the business as well.
Yeah.
I guess it's taken, hasn't it?
No, he's a child psychologist and actually is the president of the organization.
Yeah. And he'll be doing a presentation for parents tomorrow night. And then on Friday, he'll be doing a presentation for teachers. And our other guest today is Rhonda Kessler, who's the principal of Kendall Whittier. Have you put this system in effect at Kendall Whittier?
We're in process. We are in year three of doing that. Have a wonderful relationship with TU through the TU True Blue Neighbors. And we share faculty and students, and we're in each other's buildings and grounds all the time. A few years ago, Debbie and Gina from the university school, through Carrigay and Susan Neal, offered to come and teach some of my teachers the techniques. And so we put it out there. I have about 70 certified staff members, and 35 over fall and spring took them up on that and sat through the course and began to implement these techniques. And they were so surprised at how simple, like you were saying, Jim, they are. But yet, the changing of habits is very difficult. So having a simple techniques to change long ingrained habits is a very powerful tool, and it empowers. Then last year, well, the summer between that year and last year, Susan Neal, through True Blue Neighbors, sent me to Denver, where I was able to be trained as an administrator so that I could come back and teach it to my staff. And so last year I had an additional 12 to 13 that hadn't taken it. And we met on Friday afternoons and we talked through the trainings. And it's been so fun to have these simple, simple tools that are so logical and so kind of one of those, you know, used to be duh kind of statements.
Well, and it puts the responsibility back on the students, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And it undoes them because they're so used to being able to engage a teacher in these power struggles no more when they use it effectively. And I have my own experiences, you know, when they get sent to the principal's office, and that whole, oh, I'm so sad. Why are you here? Well, she did. And, you know, and, oh, you know what? I'm busy until you're ready to tell me why you're here, why you are here. I have some things to do. And then that going back and forth, and each time, oh, you know, I'm still busy.
And do they take responsibility for that?
They eventually, because they're so tired of being in my office, and they just want to deal with, they know that they're eventually going to have to deal with it. And, you know, I've seen tears, I've seen, okay, you know, the admittance of it, and it wears them down simply by waiting them out. That delayed consequence is such a powerful tool, because they're sitting there like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And usually I send them back to deal with the teacher, because mm-hmm. It wasn't in my presence. It was for them to deal with the teacher, but until they're ready to own it, I won't send them back.
Now, you started this process 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. What was the behavioral situation at the school when you first began this?
We had probably peaked at our highest suspension rate and referral rate, and it just felt like things were out of control, and nobody was really quite sure how to pull it back. And we knew we had to do something. And when Debbie and Gina approached me, it was like, absolutely. Because as a parent, I had used their book as my behavioral Bible mm-hmm. in raising my own four. Mm-hmm. And so I knew the power of it. I'd been one of those helicopter moms. I was a hovering mom. And letting my children free, so to speak, to learn from their own choices and behaviors and let that just kind of sit on their shoulders. It's painful to watch your kids in pain, mm-hmm. but you know, they didn't make the same mistakes too often.
No, you learn valuable lessons when you really make mistakes and pay the consequences for them.
And then the joy of empowering growth in people, that makes it worth repeating.
So you started implementing this about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I imagine the first year was a little difficult. Or did you see an immediate improvement?
Well, we saw an immediate improvement. And then, you know, the challenge is always teachers going back to old habits like you're referring mm-hmm. to. And so keeping it fresh and keeping the conversations flowing and rolling. So bringing that into staff meetings and bringing that into just in the hallway conversations, bringing back those 9 principles, whichever one it was, would have worked best at that moment, kept it going. So
take us through some of the 9 principles. Can you talk a little bit about them?
The first one always is neutralizing arguing. We have to be able to neutralize the arguing, handle the begging and the back talk and all of that. With that simple little technique of either responding with, I know, or nice try, or
I think one of the techniques you talk about is for the parent basically to go brain dead. I mean, just to sort of just go, no response, mm-hmm. really.
Because there's never been a parent on the face of the planet who's ever been able to reason with a kid about why limits are good for them, you know. So the kids have nothing to lose but to continue to engage you, where if you can say, what did I say, and walk off, they start to figure out that there's a loving person running this home or this classroom. And I don't want to come across like we don't want kids to ever have their say, because, you know, a lot of classrooms have a little sign up there that says teacher argues or mm-hmm. we'll listen at such and such a time each week, and you're welcome to come in and state your case. And if things aren't all that fair, then we'll take a look at it.
Is that a part of your training for teachers, is to have that mm-hmm. part where they can sort of voice their own opinions?
Sure. I know a lot of parents. I know one parent who had a little sign in the house said, I argue at 6 o'clock on Saturday morning. And she said, her kid got her up early on Saturday morning to state his case, and they actually made some changes in the house. But once we set a limit, we go with it. And it's how we set those limits is another technique.
Exactly.
And the limits we set that work for kids are the limits we describe about how we're going to run our lives, not how they're going to run their life.
Mm-hmm. It's about everybody hewing to the same path.
Sure, yeah. We don't say, eat your food. You know, say, I've served dinner for 20 minutes. It'll be there, and after that, it'll be in the refrigerator. You know, that sets the limits. But it says, here's how I'm going to run my life. You figure out how to fit into it. Mm-hmm. My car is going to be leaving at 7:30. You know, 2 ways to go, clothes in your body, clothes in a bag. It's up to you, you know.
You so,
Then delaying consequences. Mm-hmm. The ability to say, that was a bad decision. I'm going to have to do something about that. I'll get back to you after I calm down. What a good lesson for all of us to know. Right. We're better off that way.
My guest today is Jim Fay. He's the co-founder of the Love and Logic Institute. He and his son Charles are in Tulsa doing teacher and parent training this week. My other guest is Rhonda Kessler. She's the principal of Kendall Whittier Elementary School, who's implemented Love and Logic in the school. Now, we were talking earlier about how that process went. I was wondering, if the kids are not getting this reinforcement at home, is it as effective in the school, or are you adding a component to help train parents as well?
This year, it's interesting you ask that. This year, we are hoping to begin the parent education piece. We have a young woman, her name is Danielle, that works for True Blue Neighbors, and she is becoming our parent liaison. So she's bilingual. A lot of our students' families are bilingual. So having that piece, that's been a difficult area to reach our parents. And so now that she's on board and has the language, we're going to go for it this spring. Mm-hmm. But she has to go through the training, and we've talked about it, and it's not a set in stone thing yet, but we're hoping mm-hmm. that's going to...
Now 3 years into this system, has it lowered discipline problems?
It has. It is definitely lowering discipline problems as teachers are retraining their own thinking and how they do discipline in the classroom. So last year was significantly lower than the year before, and I attribute it to Love and Logic.
Now, one of the things about Love and Logic is it's about the consequences of not, say, doing your schoolwork from a parent perspective, but from a teacher perspective, you know, the teachers kind of, you have to make sure they're making progress. I think it would be sort of a difficult case. How are you working through that?
You know, there's interesting things. Kids work harder for some teachers than others. Mm-hmm. And guess who they work hardest for? The ones they love and the one they have a good relationship with. Love and Logic is basically 90% prevention and relationship. And consequences when we need them. So with the exception of the kids who are having, you know, chronic problems in their life, you see a significant change in test scores and things like that because kids are willing to work and impress that teacher that they love.
Well, and I think empathy is such a big part of it. Even when a kid is making a bad choice or wrong decision, empathy is still a part of it. So I assume they form stronger relationships with their teachers?
Absolutely. And, you know, the classroom where the teacher has boundaries that are reliable because she's consistent or he's consistent, those children feel the most safe in that classroom. And that's part of loving. And for a student to know that they're loved enough to be held accountable enough and be given choices, you're referring to homework. If they don't do their homework or if they don't do the assignments that they're given time in class to do, then they get the grade that they get, but that's their choice. And, you know, we do a lot with goal setting and things like that, but it comes back to they have to own their own choices and take responsibility for those so that we want to make curriculum accessible, but we don't want to dummy it down. We have to keep the standards high if they're going to overcome. But it's ultimately their choice.
And, of course, in Kendall Whittier, you have a very diverse neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You have every socioeconomic class and a lot of kids that may be one-parent families.
No-parent families.
Or no-parent, yeah. Mm-hmm. So is there extra challenges in reaching those children?
Yeah, we can only control the 8 hours that we have.
Uh-huh.
And we do our best by implementing and instituting practices that we know work. And these work. And always, you know, I think the biggest thing that happens for these kiddos that have difficult home lives is being seen. And one of the principles is noticing, you know, especially those kids that are difficult, that want to misbehave to get negative attention. If you just change that around and begin to notice them, that I notice you're wearing a green shirt. I notice you have glasses on. The whole idea of being seen, we all need to be seen. And it begins to open a door of communication and of just an open attitude and heart from that somewhat negative seeking attention getting child to, you know, being open to the teacher. And then a relationship can be forged. And those are the kinds of relationships that we're seeing changes in. when a teacher will just verbalize something that they see.
And it can be as simple as, I noticed you held the door open for your other schoolmate. And that sort of social behavior, too. Wow, you did that homework really fast. Or you did that schoolwork really fast. That can make a big change.
That's a big difference. That's really a paradigm shift from, I like what you're doing. I like this and that. Because kids, especially kids who have been manipulated a little bit, they know. They know, hey, somebody's trying to get something out of me. But we teach that technique. We say, find the kid who's the most uncooperative that you can ever imagine. And find six things that you can notice about him. And never say, I like, just say, I notice it. And then over a three-week period of time, notice it, a different one, at least two times each week. I notice you really like to draw. Kid wants to talk about it, fine. Well, I noticed that, you know. Mm-hmm. Another time this week in private, so nobody else hears it, you say, gee, I notice you're really loyal to your friends. I noticed that. Mm-hmm. So after they've done the six of those sentences, I tell them, check to see if the kid is more cooperative. He's doing something you don't want him to do. Go up and whisper in his ear. Say, would you quit doing that just for me? Thank you, and walk off. And if he's not more cooperative, the standing deal is you call our office and tell me about that, and that he's not more cooperative. We'll give you $200 worth of anything you can find in our catalog just for proving that it won't work. I never get a call. You know, they start saying, it's amazing what happens. These kids are like putty in our hands.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are. I mean, that's the whole point. Whether it's teachers or parents, we're molding these children. Mm-hmm. And this is a big part of the home life, too. Whether it's, you know, noticing you picked up after dinner and took your plate to the kitchen without being asked, or any of these little small things, making a statement, noticing it, tends to change behaviors.
If noticing it wasn't important, there would be no Facebook.
Now, you mentioned Facebook. This is a question I want to say. You know, you've been involved with child rearing for a long time. Is there any big changes in children and how the parental structure is changed, or how kids relate to one another because of all this media and just the fact that kids are getting older quicker, it seems like, in many ways.
Now I've worked with kids for 61 years. Mm-hmm. The big change is not the kids.
It's parents?
It's the parents. It's this epidemic of parents believing that it's my job to pave the way and make sure that my kid has a totally struggle-free life and has everything he wants when he needs it. And, of course, kids are going to respond to that. They're going to believe that. That's what their parents are teaching them. So it's really funny. 35 years ago, I started teaching love and logic. And people have been asking me, how are the parents' questions changing over those years? Mm-hmm. They're exactly the same questions that I got 35 years ago, with the exception of, how do I handle social media, computers, phones, and all that
technology.
Kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, technology. So reason for that? Everything we do is based on basic human needs, which now, don't change.
Now, Rhonda was earlier talking about being a helicopter parent in her own life, and I know that was sort of coming into vogue about the time we first had our first conversations. Has anything changed about that, or has it gotten worse?
Yeah. You know, I first started writing about helicopters parents in 1977.
And for those who don't know what helicopter parents, what was that?
Hover over their kids, protect, rescue, run interference, make sure that everybody else treats their kids so that they have a perfect life.
And what's interesting is you watch the institutions, they've kind of incorporated a lot of this.
They've been afraid of parents who are demanding that. And then there's a group of people nationwide who believe that kids should never be uncomfortable and never struggle, you know, that's their philosophical base.
And they're crippling them.
These parents I wrote about in 77 were pretty benign. You know, back in the early 2000s, I wrote a new article. It was called The Evolution of the Helicopter Parent. We now have the jet-powered turbo attack model. They're not only going to protect their kid, they're going to attack anybody who looks askance at their kids. So it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And I think as our lives become more complicated, We as adults become more fearful of having enough control. We tend to want to control other things around us more. And it's really sad for those kids.
Well, and also you're starting to hear a talk about this generation that's just now becoming adults as being a very narcissistic generation. In fact, when you talk to kids, they'll say, yeah, we are. And
And
I think there's a lot of research saying that it goes back to child rearing and making that child the focal point. And I think a lot of part of your research is it's about the child is a part of this family, and the family will have and the adults will have their time when – you know, as I remember growing up, I learned a lot of my modeling behavior by watching the adults as they were relating to one another. You know, the child was out of the picture. It was just, you know, we were on the sidelines. We were watching the action. And I think that's somewhat lost today.
Oh, it is. There was a real movement that started in the 60s called the child-centered environment, which actually put the child on a pedestal and said, most important person in the family. Well, when we did that, we took away their models. They quit looking at us to see how to act like adults, and they started looking at adults to see if the adults were watching them enough and providing them enough rewards and positive reinforcement. It was a disaster and has been a disaster, but not for everybody.
My guest today is Jim Fay, co-founder of the Love and Logic Institute. He's been talking about child rearing techniques for a long time, and his son will be doing a parent and teacher training this week, along with the other guest is Rhonda Kessler, the principal of Kendall Whittier Elementary School, who's put Love and Logic in place over the last 3 years. And I guess the next step is to take your techniques you've been learning in the classroom and try to introduce more of your parents into this environment. It sounds like a pretty exciting thing, I think.
It is. I hope we can get it launched this year.
And for teachers who are hearing about this, how's it made a difference in the average classroom at Kendall Whittier?
You can distinctly tell, which teachers are really implementing the love and logic techniques or at least trying to do their best with that, and those that are still relying on their own natural ways.
Or intuition, yeah.
Intuition. And so those that are implementing it, you can walk in their classroom, you can see clear procedures and things in place, but students are exploring. They're free to learn. There's a sense of autonomy and self-confidence. They know what their limits are. They know that the teacher absolutely loves them, and she's nurturing self-respect and other respect within the classroom because this is how we do things. And it's a distinctly different classroom.
All right. Well, two free presentations, one tomorrow night and one on Friday during the day, one geared towards parents, another geared towards teachers, but they're both free and open to the public. Jim and Rhonda, thanks very much for joining us.
What a pleasure. Thank
you. You're welcome.
Jim Fay is the co-founder of the Love and Logic Institute. Rhonda Kessler is the principal of the Kendall Whittier Elementary School, which has used the Love and Logic system for the past 3 years. Jim's son, Charles, a child psychologist and president of the Love and Logic Institute, will present two free lectures at the University of Tulsa's Alan Chapman Student Union tomorrow night at 6:30 on Love and Logic for the Home, geared towards parents, and then Friday morning at 8:30, Love and Logic for Schools, which is geared towards teachers. But both are free and open to the public. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.